obviously welcome to those of you who are coming for the second day. I'd like to continue the practice and a little bit the contextualizing of the teaching of these four immeasurable qualities of the heart. I have tried to point out yesterday that the tradition of early Buddhism, or particularly the Theravada tradition, has handed these teachings on these four divine abidings, love, compassion, joy, and equanimity, mostly as meditative practices. There is substantial evidence for this in the Pali Canon, and the texts definitely support that approach to these four Brahmaviharas. But there are other layers of the teaching of these Brahmaviharas, and I like, since they seem to be more neglected on those other layers in the sort of standard handing down of early Buddhist teachings, it is a particular... I think it is particularly important to acknowledge that Brahmaviharas are not just meditative exercises, that they are virtues on the level of mind that can be trained, practiced, that is not necessarily dependent on formal meditation exercise, but that both the recognition of the quality of friendliness, benevolence, and the capacity to attend, be available, and welcome what is available, if one wants to psychologize the notion of metta, that this capacity is not simply a practice that entails formal meditation. It is much deeply rooted in the human mind. In fact, it is one of the expressions of universal empathy that makes human beings human. And it's important to acknowledge that we cannot lose this capacity, that Buddhist teaching starts from an acknowledgement that we are intrinsically capable of that, irrespective of our meditative achievements, irrespective of what we think of our meditative achievements. Often these latter two categories may diverge considerably. There are deep patterns of the human mind that make it inclined to forms of empathetic resonance, both capable of doing that and of appreciating when it is happening to us, that I have pointed out, lie at the heart of human development. Not just individual growth, but actually evolutionary, they lie at the heart of our capacity for development. Quite literally, brain development, social development, higher corticofrontal skills, basically. And it's important to contextualize these Buddhist teachings that come with a funny name, or with two funny names. One means immeasurable upamanyas, that's the major name that the texts are using, or Brahmaviharas, which slightly awkward as well, they don't quite sit. Neither do we believe in gods, nor do we know what a Brahma is, and so divine abidings never quite cut it as a sort of catch term. You know, it doesn't seem to be very meaningful to most people. Who is Brahma and why should I abide there? Yeah. So it is important to take these teachings out of their apparent niche and make sure that we start with a recognition that this is already happening. We have an intrinsic capacity to be kind, friendly, to extend love. We have an intrinsic capacity to pick up on other people's pain and resonate with that pain in appropriate ways. We have a capacity to share into the successes of others, experience joy at the goodness that takes place in other people's lives. And we have a capacity to stay relationally connected and yet remain equanimous. Usually, the pattern is affection is the basis for my loving kindness. So I need people to like me, and I need people to like, and then I am kind and friendly and welcoming and metta-full with them. So the pattern is I'm compassionate if it's close, you know, if I'm connected somehow in a situation, somebody gets hurt and my heart reaches, goes out to that person. The pattern is I can feel joy for the success and the goodness that takes place in other people's lives if these people are very, very close. If they're not so close, my response to their success is generally jealousy, envy, things like that, rather than sympathetic joy. And when it comes to equanimity, usually there isn't such a thing as equanimity. There is basically I want, I don't want, and the rest is indifferent. Yeah? So it's important to distinguish these capacities of the human heart. They're all relational. That's a key message. And they're forms of universal empathy. They connect me both outward to real other human beings, and they connect me to my own humanity. So these Brahmaviharas form the basis of all notion of growth, all notion of sanity, all notion of realization, all notion of wholeness. And obviously, they form the basis of a mind that is capable of deeper stillness. If you know any people who claim to be enlightened, that's how they are expected to be behaving. Yeah? Loving, compassionate, joyful, and equanimously related. If they're behaving not in that way, you may suspect that they're either not enlightened or that you haven't quite understood what they're about. But if you are in doubt, they're probably not enlightened. You know? Enlightened people manifest these forms of empathy as the natural abiding of their heart. Yeah? That's their natural sort of posture. Love, compassion, joy, and equanimous relationship. If they're not like that, I would be suggesting prudence. Yeah. Yeah. It's always good to look what people do with, you know, money, power, sex, but particularly if they claim realization, expect them to be loving, compassionate, joyous, and connected, equanimously connected. If they're not that, great suspicions. Grumpy arahats, great suspicions. Exploitative saints, great suspicions. Yeah, disconnected, disembodied, and disinterested realized beings, great suspicion. Yeah? It's very risky to get close to something who is apparently powerful or claims that and not connected. Not connected human beings are dangerous to be with. They don't take care of you. They don't notice what's going on with you. Even if they are willing to take care, they're not capable of. So what has saved us in the last 150,000 years is connection. Our capacity to attuned relationship. And that makes necessary that we notice what's going on. Notice what's going on here, on this side of the field, and what's going on there, on the other side of the field. Because there is something happening in between. And what is happening in between is a modulating effect. And that modulating effect is basically calibrated by different functions of mind. The most powerful one is called sati, it's called mindfulness. It's very simple. The heart of all Buddhist training hinges on a very simple feature, namely that the mind starts to resemble in its state the quality of that which its attention keeps attending to and keeps picking up. In other words, what I put into this mind through my senses and through my attention to objects, sensory objects, cognitive objects, what I put my attention to is likely to color the quality of my mind. Yeah. We all understand that. Yeah? We understand that some of our bodies become what we eat. Depending on what we eat, we get results in this body. Buddhist mind training hinges on a very simple principle, namely that the mind starts resembling the stuff it keeps associating with and it keeps attending to. So in this way, the directedness of our attention and the clarity of our intention make it possible that we can modulate the states of mind by seeking out suitable forms of attention and suitable objects of attention. Because it's more difficult to still the mind, we start with making the body still. We give it a quiet, upright posture. We establish stillness in the body. And we attend to a bodily process, namely breathing. So because the bodily process is dynamic, we cannot just use one quality of attention and fix it there. We need an attention that is kind of becoming more soft when the sensation becomes more soft. And that attunement makes the mind more still. We start with the body. Body is still. Breathing goes soft. Attention is on the softening breathing. And the softening quality of the breathing gets mimicked by the state of mind. Yeah? So it's the attention that connects the body and the mind via the breath. Every big tradition has understood that. The Greeks have understood it with their pneuma, the Indians with their prana, the Chinese and the Japanese with their chi and ki, the Latins with the spiritus, and that breath attended to is a prime means of modulating mental states via somatic qualities. It's maybe not explicitly stated in many meditative exercises, but that's what it boils down to. We direct attention of the mind with the help of our capacity to intend suitable process, like breathing, and by continually attending to something softening, soothing, refined, the quality of mind is echoing the object we keep attending to. Yeah? So this is the linchpin of Buddhist mind training. You can read it up, Majjhima 19. Yeah? Whatever the heart takes up, whatever the mind takes up and ponders and engages with, that will become the quality of your heart. Yeah? So, Brahmaviharas are infusing our attention. Attention, the Pali term for this is manasikara, is a very everyday function of mind. Every moment of our experience, every conscious moment of our experience, I have to say, thus hold forms of attention. But our attention is not very refined. It may not be very malleable, it may be very topical and episodic. And it is not necessarily connected with value or with ethics or anything. We can attend carefully to cleaning out the bank safe. You know, in fact, if you have a habit of cleaning out bank safe, I suggest you do that as carefully and as attentively as possible, you know, because you're very likely to get in trouble soon. You can attentively hunt for something. So attention is not intrinsically wholesome. You can attend in sadistic ways. You can attend in cruel ways. You can be highly attentive in a sort of sociopathic way. This is quite possible. Attention in itself does not necessarily heal. So training attention in itself is not necessarily wholesome. This is important to understand. What makes attention wholesome is the fact that it is A, connected with wholesome objects, and that it is infused with particular qualities. One of these qualities is at least one of the Brahmaviharas. That's an important distinction, very straight and clear in Buddhist psychology, not so straight and clear in the mindfulness world. Yeah? if mindfulness is defined as attention. Yeah. So that's one of the things I really like to make a distinction between attention and mindfulness. Mindfulness is not just attention, it's attention plus. And that plus means a connection to value and a connection to one of the Brahmaviharas. Generally, the best one to start with is metta. As long as possible, we're trying to be welcoming, inviting, respectfully curious, available. That's where we respond psychologically best to when we are met with in that way. Introspective work, like meditation, is most powerfully transformative if we manage to access this paradigm of loving kindness. If we meet our own stuff, our own experience, our own bodies, our own minds, our own resistances, if we meet them in a loving, available, curious and respectful benevolence. Now, if our attention has a shot of this, is laced with that quality. So it's not just clinical two-fingered observation of my own ignorance taking place here, but it's a kind of relationally attuned and kindly way of connecting with my stuff, even if my stuff is highly unenlightened. Yeah, so that's the sort of background, and that is why it is important that these Brahmaviharas are given weight, both as an acknowledgement that I don't need to invent them, I don't need to produce them in my meditation practice. They're actually, to some degree, already here, at least dormant. They're here. Then the next layer, important, is Brahmaviharas as social virtues. This is stuff I see in others and I see in myself. I can recognize kindness. I can recognize compassion. I can recognize it in the way that I feel intention. I can recognize it in speech. I can recognize it in action. So we all do that. If we want to be nice to each other, we give each other sweet things, or we look out after each other, or we help each other. These are acts of friendliness or acts of compassion or acts of shared joy. Yeah? If you bring food here and you celebrate in what other people bring along and you share that, then this is an act of mudita, a bodily action of mudita in Buddhist parlance. Yeah? If you look out for each other in a new place where everything is slightly improvised and I don't know where the towels are and what to do with the cardboard plates, then this is bodily actions of compassion if you help each other when you know where to go with these things. Yeah. So these qualities of Brahmaviharas are not just feelings. They're not just emotions. They're not just states of minds. Yeah. We do them. We can intend them. Our minds can be infused with that, but we can actually act upon them. We can manifest them. We can speak them. So on a second level, where Brahmaviharas are virtues, meaning something to be practiced, we can first of all acknowledge that this exists. I can acknowledge there are people who are kind. I can acknowledge, like I hope you have acknowledged yesterday in the groups, in the small groups, that you have been touched by somebody else's kindness or completely surprised by somebody else's kindness in a place where you were expecting something else. The really big thing on that second level is that we acknowledge Brahmaviharas as something in others. We are seeing it, we are feeling it, we are capable of admiring. Admiration is really good. Things we admire are things we are much easier capable of emulating. Often when we see virtues in other people, we don't necessarily admire. We look at it slightly askance and say, I wish I had that. She's really good at this. God, it's really amazing. Yeah? And our admiration is not there, we think. We make, rather than we make an admiring statement about the quality in him, we make a statement about a deficiency of ours. Yeah? Instead of elevating the other or elevating the quality which happens to be with the other, But it's also already a little bit with me, because if I don't already have some of this quality, I don't even recognize it, to be honest. Yeah. So when I admire something in somebody else, it strengthens my chances to emulate that quality in the other. But instead of doing that, what is the quality in him, I make as a self-statement and proclaim a deficiency in myself. Yeah. So instead of elevating him, I lower myself. This is a bad start psychologically if you want to actually emulate this quality. That you take him down a notch so that being who you are is not as painful. Yeah. But secretly, actually, I think it is painful, because this is not he is good, but I am bad. Yeah. So we end up with an affirmation of a self-notion, and it's a self-notion determined by deficiency. Yeah. Yet another quality I don't have. Yeah. Which is an unfortunate position if you actually feel this is something desirable or something worthy or something valuable the other person has. So admiration of virtues, acknowledgement of virtues, where you meet them, is a powerful way the practice of Brahmavihara on that second level starts. Acknowledging that people have compassion, acts of compassion, that they are seen, that they are appreciated, that they are remembered, that people who have acted in outstanding ways, that this is held up. You know, all societies do that. We all marvel at people who have done heroic things. We all marvel at people who excel in particular fields, music or mountain climbing or skydiving or whatever whatever your pet domain is. We admire at people who have done extraordinary things in there. 19-year-old Reinhold Messner climbing the north face of the Droite at age 19, you know, unaided by a companion, to the horror of every onlooking mountain climber who realizes one false move and the man is out. You know, it was felt immoral. And yet, we can't, if you're in this world, you can't help feeling remarkable respect for what that must feel at the bottom of a 1200 meter wall, ice, north facing, one of the biggest things in Europe, and hacking away there with your ice axe and your pythons and your crampons and your ice dagger, and just walking up there. You know, if you're just cocky and a little testosterone charged, you'd be easily cured. You just stand at the bottom of one of these things and you look up for the next 1200 meters and you realize that you're mad. Yeah. So if it's just cockiness and testosterone, you wouldn't hack that. You know, it's never, 10 steps in there and you're cured. You go home to the hut and think, never again. So, but this man has obviously felt something capable that is not been done before him. That is, by standard knowledge of mountaineering, it's not just daring, it's plain mad, because you don't have a companion to secure you. That means you're basically falling when you're falling. And he feels the confidence to do this. And he does it. And I don't want to think that he's a greatly wise man. There's good reasons to believe that there's a sizable ego at work there. And yet, I admire a trembling heart that feels in itself a confidence to do something it has no guarantee it is actually capable of doing. Yeah. That is something I admire. Yeah. Not the wisdom, not the muscles, but standing there, and as a 19-year-old kid, when you basically know nothing, and everybody is older and has more experience than you, to have that kind of trust in what you can only intuit, you can't really know it, that this is possible, that this is doable, and that you're going to do this now. There's something powerful in there, and I can't help having an admiration for this. Or people who have not acted on their rage when they had all reason to be enraged. Yeah? Or people who have been really grand-hearted. I've always, there are heroes in my life. I guess there are in yours, and I hope there are in yours. If not, go out and look for heroes. It's needed to have people who in exemplary ways embody qualities we think are precious. And Brahmaviharas are such qualities that we can recognize in other people. There are people who are kind in ways they're not paid for. Yeah. There are people who are compassionate in ways that may not be seen by a large TV world. Or there are people who have an infectious capacity to share the joy of others. And there are people whom you may admire for their level-headedness, staying, holding responsibility, staying connected, accepting the burden of taking care of others, and not go either stressed or arrogant, who stay level when things go wrong, when the going gets tough. That is something I do admire. And it's possible to admire such Brahmaviharas. Our pop culture admires Brahmaviharas. If you look at how people are portrayed, how powerful people are portrayed in plays and in movies. People who don't have to prove how powerful they are, or people who can have a lot of might and yet still are kind or available. There's ample of cultural, pop cultural evidence for our appreciation for these things. And the practice of Brahmaviharas on that second layer as a virtue, it's important to start with acknowledging and directly admiring where we see things that we feel we don't yet embody. Yeah. And then obviously the third layer is the practice of Brahmaviharas as meditation practice. Learning to instill these qualities and make them grow stronger in our heart, spend more time in them, finding skills in how to engender this in our minds. Gladness, kindness, attuned resonance for the painful aspects, and experience the connecting force these Brahmaviharas have in our lives. One of the things that these Brahmaviharas speak of is an intrinsic non-separateness, that my happiness is not of a nature that it doesn't matter what's happening to you. I can only be truly happy if you share in some of that happiness. That you may be your loved ones, it may be the people you live with, it may be your neighbors. You are affected. We are all affected by each other. And attempting to cut us off from being affected by others, to make our happiness more safe, doesn't work. It creates isolation, alienation, and it creates emptiness. Not a nice Buddhist emptiness as the sort of the transparent form of conditional relationship, but the emptiness as in void, as in basically it doesn't hold value anymore. So these Brahmaviharas, and that's important to see, these are not just nice feelings. These are powerful both practices and powerful underpinning notions on which the whole Buddhist mind training hinges. So enough of the theory. Let's take a meditation posture.